Welcome back, everybody, for another deep dive. This time we're tackling something that's really pushing the boundaries of science.
Absolutely, we are.
It's about the physics of self-organization.
Ah, yes.
Now, I know that might sound a bit intimidating. Physics.
Yeah.
Self-organization.
Right.
But believe me when I say, this is way more fascinating than it might sound at first.
Oh, absolutely. It's a question that's been bugging scientists for over a century now. How does order just appear, seemingly out of nowhere?
It's true. It's like, think about it. The patterns you see in a hurricane.
Yeah.
A flock of birds. Even how our own brains work.
All incredibly complex.
These systems, they're so intricate, yet they come from these really simple parts.
Right.
So how does that even work? That's the puzzle we're going to try to solve today.
Exactly.
We're diving headfirst into a research paper that's really trying to crack this code of self-organization.
It's really pushing the boundaries, blending physics, information theory, and even computation.
It really is. And it's a challenge that has stumped some of the greatest minds for ages, you know?
It almost seems to go against what we know about the universe.
Yeah.
Know? The tendency toward disorder.
That's exactly it. We all know, like, things tend to get messier, right? Laundry piles up.
Oh, yeah.
Desks get cluttered. It's just how things are. But then you look at nature, and there are these incredible examples of patterns just forming spontaneously.
Spontaneously.
And it kind of defies the whole idea of things getting messier.
It does. It really highlights this sort of tension
between
what we observe in nature and this really core law in physics, the second law of thermodynamics.
Yeah. So remind us, what is that again?
So it says that entropy, which we often think of as disorder, is always increasing in like a closed system.
Right.
But then we have these patterns, these structures that seem to be creating order out of chaos.
It's almost like nature's playing a trick on us. It's like saying that sometimes more entropy can actually lead to a more structured, you know, configuration, not less.
Yeah. And that's where I think this common idea of entropy just being disorder needs a bit of refining. Because if you look at it from an information theory point of view, entropy is actually more about uncertainty. It's about the lack of information we have about, like, a system's microscopic state.
Okay, so break that down for me. You're saying entropy isn't just about things being messy, but rather how much we don't know about what's happening at a really, really tiny level.
Exactly. Think of it like a box full of gas molecules.
Right.
Like, you can measure the temperature, the pressure of the gas, the whole.
Right.
But you can't possibly know where each molecule is and how fast it's moving at any given time.
Right. It's too much to track.
Way too much. There's a lot of uncertainty at that level.
So the more molecules are zipping around in that box, the less we know about what each one's doing, the higher the entropy?
Precisely. But here's the kicker. Higher entropy or more uncertainty doesn't always mean more disorder in, you know, the way we usually picture it.
Okay, so walk me through that. How does this play out in the real world, you know, in creating these complex patterns?
All right, let's take liquid crystals.
Okay.
Picture a bunch of these molecules in the liquid crystal, kind of like a really packed room full of people.
I get it.
At higher densities, they're all jumbled up, facing random directions, just chaos. But when you lower the density, give them some space.
Uh-huh.
They spontaneously arrange themselves into these neat and tidy rafts.
Wow.
It's like the crowd suddenly forming perfectly straight lines.
So even though entropy is increasing, the system actually gets more structured. It seems a little counterintuitive.
It is. It shows us that entropy and order, the way we normally think about it, aren't always opposites.
Fascinating. So how do scientists traditionally try to make sense of all this?
Yeah.
Yeah, if the universe is supposed to be becoming more and more disordered, how do we explain these beautiful patterns popping up everywhere?
Well, the traditional approach in physics leans on what we call constructionism. Basically, scientists propose specific mechanisms and then work out what the consequences of those would be. A classic example is Rayleigh's explanation of those Barnard convection cells. Those are the honeycomb patterns we talked about.
Right.
He figured out how the physics of heat flow creates those patterns.
So it's like building a model, seeing what that model predicts, and if it matches what we see in the real world, then they know they're on the right track.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the thing is, this approach works best for simple systems or ones that are close to equilibrium. When you get into really complex situations like trying to understand how a hurricane forms,
right,
constructionism starts to fall apart.
So even with all our fancy equations and computer models, there are some systems that are just way too complex for us to fully grasp using this, you know, building block approach.
Unfortunately, yeah. We can simulate hurricanes on computers, make pretty good predictions, but we still don't totally get all the mechanisms that cause them to form.
It's just too much going on.
There are just too many variables interacting. And this is where computational complexity theory comes in. It shows us the limits of analyzing systems that are super complex.
So some problems are just way too hard to solve directly, even with powerful computers.
Exactly. And you know what? This is true even for systems that seem pretty simple on the surface, like cellular automata. They're basically these grids where each cell follows a simple rule based on what its neighbors are doing.
Mm-hmm.
But even with these, predicting how they'll behave in the long run, using that traditional constructionist approach, it can be incredibly difficult.
Wow. So if the usual methods aren't cutting it, what's the alternative? How do we move past this constructionism to understand these more complex systems?
Well, this is where things start to get really fascinating. The research we're looking at today, it suggests a whole new way of looking at these complex systems.
Okay.
Instead of building them up from the bottom, it uses what are called evolution operators.
Evolution operators.
Yeah. They're known as Koopman and Perron-Frobenius. And they give us a way to study these systems from a higher level.
Okay.
We can look at how the system as a whole changes over time.
Okay. I'm already feeling a little lost. Can you break it down for me? What exactly are these evolution operators and what do they do?
It sounds pretty complicated.
Imagine you're trying to figure out how the water flows in a river, right?
Okay.
Instead of trying to track each little water molecule impossible, by the way, you could focus on the overall patterns, you know, like the currents, the swirls, the eddies.
I see.
That's what Koopman operators let us do. They let us zoom out and see that big picture, the emergent patterns, without getting stuck in the microscopic details.
So instead of getting lost in the details, we're seeing the whole forest, not just the trees.
Exactly. And the really cool part, these operators work on things we can actually measure. Like, you know, the temperature or the velocity of a fluid at different spots.
Or the position of a flock of birds, things like that.
Right.
By analyzing how these things change, we can uncover hidden patterns and structures in how the system behaves.
So you mentioned these operators help us see coherent structures. Mm-hmm. What exactly are those?
They're essentially the building blocks of emergent organization. Think of a hurricane.
Okay.
It's a coherent structure that mm-hmm. comes from all these complex interactions between air and water molecules,
mm-hmm.
or the swirls you see in turbulent flow.
Yeah.
Coherent structures, too. They're like the main characters in a complex system, the patterns that really drive the show.
So instead of trying to keep up with every single actor in a massive play, we're figuring out who the leads are, the ones really driving the story.
Perfect analogy.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing. Koopman operators can actually help us generalize concepts we already use in physics.
Okay.
Like in fluid dynamics, we talk about global modes. These are flow patterns that change at a single frequency. Think of it like a specific vibration on a musical instrument.
Right.
Koopman operators give us a broader way to understand these global modes, not just in fluids, but in all sorts of complex systems.
This is making me completely rethink how we approach understanding these complex systems. It's like we got to find a way to see the whole picture, you know, to really grasp those emergent patterns that are just staring us in the face.
Right.
But how do we actually do that? How do we actually go about pinpointing these really important patterns?
The key to all of this is this really interesting concept called predictive equivalence.
Predictive equivalence.
Yeah, it's this mind-blowing idea that basically groups different states of a system together if they all lead to the same predictions for the future.
Whoa, okay. Give me a real-world example. What do you mean by predictive equivalence?
Let's say you're a meteorologist, right?
Okay.
You're trying to forecast the weather. You might notice that certain combos of cloud formations, wind speed, and humidity, they almost always mean rain's coming.
Right.
Those different situations would be considered predictively equivalent because they share the same outcome, rain.
Okay, I think I'm starting to get it. So you're grouping together things that might look different on the surface, but they all basically lead to the same result in the end.
Exactly. And what's so cool about this is it lets us simplify how we understand a complex system.
Right.
Instead of trying to track every single possible state, we can just group all those predictively equivalent states together and just focus on the transitions between them. It's like making a simpler roadmap of how the system behaves, highlighting the key paths it can take.
So we're not just seeing the patterns, we're starting to understand the logic behind them, the rules that guide how the system goes from one state to the next.
Yes, and this idea actually has some deep connections to computer science.
Right.
You know how computers use algorithms to process information?
Uh-huh.
Well, it turns out certain types of simple theoretical machines called semi-automata, They're perfect for representing these predictive equivalence classes.
Wait, hold on. So we're using tools from computer science to understand the basic computations that are happening in nature.
Exactly. It just goes to show you how interconnected different fields of knowledge can be. And it gets even cooler when we think about applying this to systems that change over space and time, like weather or ocean currents.
Right.
Or even the whole climate.
Okay, how do we even begin to apply this to something as enormous and complex as the climate? It seems impossible, like finding a needle in a haystack.
It's definitely a challenge.
Yeah.
But we can borrow an idea from Einstein's theory of relativity to help us out here. Remember those light cones that show all the possible paths light can take through space-time?
Yeah, I remember those diagrams from physics class. But how do light cones relate to understanding the climate?
Well, in this case, we use light cones to represent causality. That's the link between cause and effect.
Okay,
so imagine you've got a specific point in space and time, right?
Right.
Its past light cone includes all the points of the past that could have influenced it.
Okay.
And its future light cone includes all the points in the future that it could potentially influence.
So it's like a cone of influence showing every possible connection to that one point.
Exactly. And by looking at the information within these light cones, we can define what we call local causal states. These states group together regions of space-time that have similar predictive power. It's like saying these different areas, even though they might look different, they all have the same potential to shape the future in a similar way.
So by understanding these local causal states, we're not just looking at a single moment. We're actually mapping out the cause and effect structure of a complex system.
You got it. And here's the amazing part. This approach lets us pinpoint those coherent structures we talked about earlier, you know, those swirling, organized patterns that emerge out of all the chaos. We can actually use these local causal states to identify things like hurricanes in climate data or eddies in a turbulent fluid.
So it's not just a theory, it actually has real-world applications. It's like we're developing a whole new language to understand and predict these super complex events.
And that language is all about seeing the world through the lens of information processing, recognizing that there are computations happening all around us all the time.
Okay, my brain is trying to do somersaults to wrap itself around all of this.
Yeah.
We've gone from these kind of abstract mathematical ideas to actually identifying hurricanes using causal states. It's incredible. It's like we're finally starting to crack the code of complexity. All right, so we're back for the final part of our deep dives into all things emergent organization. We've covered some pretty wild stuff already, from those limitations in, like traditional physics, to that mind-bending concept of intrinsic computation.
Yeah, it's been quite a journey.
It has. But you mentioned that the paper we're looking at goes even further.
It does.
Proposing a whole new kind of statistical mechanics.
A new kind.
One that actually takes emergent behavior into account. That sounds incredibly ambitious, to say the least.
It is ambitious. Mm-hmm. But it all comes back to those causal states we've been talking about. Okay. They really capture the essence of what a system's been through.
Yeah.
All the info that's actually important for figuring out what's going to happen next.
Right.
And the really revolutionary idea here is that how these causal states change over time, it forms its own kind of self-contained system.
Okay.
And this new system, it fits in with the existing laws of physics, but it works at a higher level of description, I should say.
Okay, I'm going to need some help unpacking this one. It sounds like we're building a whole new world on top of the physics we already know.
That's actually a pretty good way to think about it. Imagine you're trying to understand, like, a traffic jam.
Okay, I'm with you.
Instead of looking at each individual car, you know, how fast they're going, if they switch lanes, you could zoom out and look at the traffic jam as one whole thing.
Right.
You could study how it starts, how it moves, how it finally breaks up. That's essentially what this new statistical mechanics lets us do for these complex systems. We're going beyond the individual parts to see how the whole system acts.
So we're not tossing out those fundamental laws of physics, but we're adding another layer of understanding on top of them, a layer that's specifically about those emergent patterns we've been talking about.
That's exactly it. It's like we're building a bridge between that microscopic world, which is governed by all those detailed laws of physics, and the macroscopic world, where those patterns we see, those emergent patterns, are what really matter.
Okay.
And the key to building that bridge, understanding how those causal states work, how they change.
Okay, I'm following so far. But can you give me a real world example? How do we actually connect those super tiny details to those big noticeable patterns?
Let's think back to those vortex dynamics in a fluid, that example we talked about earlier.
Okay.
At the microscopic level, we've got all these incredibly complex equations, like the Navier-Stokes equations, that try to describe every single particle in that fluid.
Right. It's just too much to handle.
Way too much. But when we zoom out, what we actually see are these gorgeous swirling vortices coming out of all that, that seemingly random movement. So the question is, how do we connect those two levels, the tiny and the big picture?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. How do we get from all those little swirling particles to these huge swirling vortices? It feels like a massive leap.
It is a leap. But this new framework helps us make that leap. We can define this kind of mapping, like a translation guide almost, that takes us from that microscopic view of the fluid, all those individual particles, to the macroscopic view of those vortices.
Okay.
What this mapping does is it picks out the important information about those vortices, where they are, how big they are, how strong they are, and it just ignores all the microscopic details that don't really matter for understanding the overall picture.
So we're cutting out the noise, zeroing in on the real signal, the key information that makes those patterns what they are.
Precisely. And now comes the truly amazing part. We can actually describe how those vortices change based on their causal states without even needing those ridiculously complicated fluid equations. We can write down new equations that explain how they interact, how they move, how they grow or shrink, all without referring back to those microscopic details.
So we're basically creating a higher level explanation, a new set of rules just for the behavior of those patterns, like a physics of emergence.
Exactly. It's like we're looking beyond that microscopic world and seeing a whole new layer of reality where those patterns, those emergent patterns, are the stars of the show.
This is truly blowing my mind. We're not just describing patterns anymore. We're starting to understand the mechanisms that create them, the logic behind it all. It's like we're uncovering the secret code that controls how complex the universe can get.
It really is a profound shift in perspective, one that sees emergence as a fundamental part of reality, not just some weird side effect. And it could change how we understand everything, from how galaxies form to how our own brains work.
You know, throughout this deep dive, you've mentioned hurricanes, flocks of birds, even our own minds. Are you suggesting this framework could help us understand something as complex as consciousness?
It's definitely a possibility, and a really exciting one at that. If we can apply this to understand how patterns form in, like, physical systems, could we use similar ideas to understand how consciousness arises from those intricate interactions in our brains?
Wow.
It's a question that's right at the cutting edge of science.
It's both exciting and a little bit daunting, to be honest. It feels like we've barely scratched the surface of what this new way of thinking can do.
We have. But that's what makes science so amazing. Every new discovery opens up new questions, new possibilities to explore.
Well, I can't wait to see where this all leads. I feel like our deep dive today has given me a whole new appreciation for just how intricate the universe is, how complexity comes from simplicity, how order emerges from chaos.
And that sense of wonder, that desire to understand, that's what drives science forward. Who knows what incredible insights are waiting for us as we keep exploring this idea of emergent organization.
So to everyone listening, keep those questions coming, keep questioning those assumptions, and never stop exploring all the incredible things the universe has to offer. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into the world of emergent organization. It's been a real mind bender.